Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2908. That's 2908. I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA. And tonight we have a wonderful guest. She's been on before, but not in quite a few years. As well, it's been a while. Yeah, 2016. And a lot of things have happened and changed, and I can't wait to hear about it. Her name is Jennifer, or I think she prefers to be called Jenny Murphy, and she is from Fort Myers, Florida. She's a returning NASCA family member and a child and family therapist, child advocate, CSA and sex trafficking expert who was in, last on 2016. Now, I'm not going to say any more. I'm very glad that she's here. And what I'm going to do is read the mission statement, because we do that. And it's good that people get to know exactly what we do on NASCA. This only gives you a little bit, actually. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. And number one is educating the public. Very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I always hit heavy on prevention because I believe if we had a lot more prevention going on, and that means community involvement and also educating community, I think that there'd be far less. I really think that we'd have that dent put in the stats of child abuse. Not going to happen overnight, but if more people became more involved with the problem of child abuse, and I took more of an interest and realized that we do not live in an innocent world. We absolutely do not. It would be a very good thing. It'd be a very good thing. Because, quite frankly, our children do need, they absolutely do need to know how to keep themselves safer. And I've gone over things on NASCA of actual incidents where kids whose parents did speak to them about the good, the bad, and the ugly, were safer kids because they knew what to do if someone was approaching them, say to kidnap them or whatever the case might be. Now, I'm going to go to our guest now. We have a nice panel here. We have Nancy from Georgia. I guess she'll be listening or whatever. We have our guests, of course. There's myself, and then there's also Kim. And so tonight I'm going to be hosting. I will be off pretty soon for probably a few weeks. Because I have to have an operation, and I think Kim will get real busy. Yes, I do. Yeah, but anyway, okay, let's get to our guest, and let's start this show. Again, her name is Jennifer. Jennifer, hi, how are you?
Hi, Carol. It's so good to talk to you and your audience. Thank you so much. wow, have things changed. We're just so grateful for giving us an opportunity to expand our reach and to let the listeners know just how much we've grown and how much we've done and the work that's lying ahead of us within your initiative. So I am thrilled to be here. Lovely to speak to all of you, Kim. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for being here. You have so much to offer, okay? I'm so proud of you. You have, like, grown tremendously, okay? I remember when you first came on to tell your story and to speak about other things. And look at you today, by God, okay?
Wow.
This is great.
Right?
Yes.
The God is on the move. It's not because of me. It's just because of him. I just learned to listen and be still, which if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so when I'm not working with the hurting and trying to help them heal, I'm behind the scenes, I'm chasing the monsters that hurt them. And you can't be anything but a hammer. So the hardest lesson in my life, the most important lesson in my life, was to learn to be still. So, and that's where it all started, and that's how we got to the last 4 years and where we are today. And again, I am near the messenger. I'm just the instrument that has been given this gift of, healing and just seeing things from all sorts of perspectives. Not just a clinical perspective, not just a legal perspective. I'm able to condense everything that I know and do and love into making this a better world. And when you said prevention, of course, if you've read the summary, prevention, protection, and prosecution, that's what we're working on. And we're focusing on child sex abuse exploitation, not trafficking. It's a part of it, but that's not the focus. It's not where we started. And then the second part of it is, dealing with other trauma. So you're talking about, so we break it down into prevention, protection, prosecution, but what people may not understand and connect the dots with is that when our clinical program will be new, coming this winter, I believe, hopefully, and it focuses on a specific population where we think horrible things about them because they can do horrible things. This is the type of program where we step in the gap of the pain and the trauma and how it came about. So when we prosecute these offenders, that's part of our prevention plan. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mhm. Yes.
So we're trying to go ahead. So our prevention for the summary is: what do we do to keep kids from getting hurt? Specifically, the child sex abuse and exploitation. And again, there's a hypothesis there. The trafficking is part of it, but the scourge on this planet is the unfettered, undealt with, unconsequenced, unaddressed, practically illegal raping our children in their own beds and homes more often than not. And if you don't believe me, spend 35 years looking into the eyes of the kids, the women, the mothers, the daughters, the brothers, the sons, the uncles, the dads, and tell me I'm not speaking the truth. It is such a cancer, and people are not recovering from it because we don't understand it. Part of the initiative is to build on professional development manual, training manuals for professionals, and it starts with my own programs that I've written along the years, but we're adding new content. But that training for those child sex crimes is critical to our prevention. And so it all just kind of ties in together, but it starts with child sex abuse on that side and the trauma on the other and how they all interlock together. We used to think that those things were separate. They're not. And if you don't believe what I'm telling you, go to a county jail. Go to the women's dorms in a county jail because our jails in this country are in our prisons, are a front row seat to the crap show of a life that happens to adults when they have been sexually abused as children.
That's right.
And I'm not sure why we don't understand this country where they do in others, because I've lived and been clinically supervised and worked and been very successful with programs and keeping families together. But this country does not grasp the concept that the others do. And it is simply this. It is much easier and way less costly to raise a healthy child than to fix a broken adult.
Let me say something there. What you're saying is quite right, mm-hmm. because I worked in detention, okay? And, of course, I knew all the ones that had been, you know, sexually abused and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when kids
Most
are,
of them.
Are, oh, my God, that's it. And I mean,
Most,
that's a
yeah,
big
that's why they're on drugs. And they're yeah,
right.
and they're there because they're on drugs. So here's the question. Mm-hmm. Let me interject this real quickly because now I'm going.
Yeah.
There are no – their issues are not – they're not criminal. They're mental health, number one. Number two, it's about not getting treated for the child sex abuse that makes them addicts, which makes them petty criminals. Why are the victims in jails and prisons in this country, and every single day I post another FBI alert about another registered sex offender or another rapist or another, oh, we had a young pastor, youth pastor. He put a camera in the girls' bathroom. This is in a county where they say we don't have sex crimes. Why do I walk into a county jail dorm and see all the children? Because they look like adults. They wear adult clothes. They might even do adult things, but they're not adults. They're children.
That's right.
Inside, they're the age that they were either remember their sex abuse at home or they were plagued with drugs and alcohol and the whole nine yards until they look in their 20s like they should be. They're not. They're little girls, and there's no help for them, not in county jails. I ask. They don't want it. And not really in prisons either. You can get education, but you cannot get good clinical therapy. And I'm not just talking for the victims. I'm talking about the offenders who are sometimes put in jail or prison, and then they're always let out. I mean, if you follow our posts on social media and LinkedIn, and you will see every single day, every single day. And that's the only the crime offenders we know that they're finding and being able to get an indictment for and then prosecuting. So
right.
I'm tired of seeing the victims in jail. I'm tired because they're just hurting. They're just hurting. Everybody's hurting. That's what I mean, the scourge. A lot of people think that sex crimes are a battle between, like a battle of the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Not so. It's not quite accurate. In our opinion, it is a battle of good and evil. And right now, evil's winning. And I am not okay with that. I am not okay to continue to go to seminars and symposiums. And God bless all of you who are doing it because education is a big part of it. But the problem with the child sex crimes and the trafficking industry is that everybody's talking about it. It's not that complicated. Problems are complicated. Solutions are not. All I hear people do, I actually backed out of several this year. And again, I'm not trying to put anybody's efforts down. But from my perspective, over 35 years in this specific field, working with children and families all over North America, this is what has to be addressed. It's not trafficking. This is a flesh of good and evil, and evil is absolutely winning. I can't stand it anymore. So I have backed out of some of the things that I thought I would do this year, just to put out the education awareness. And then I get pushed back, and people who don't really want to hear the truth. Which we have been investigating for over 4 years undercover. So I just don't want to talk. I mean, I'm so happy to talk to you, Carol, of course, and all of your listeners anytime. But I'm tired of talking about the steps and not changing them. I'm tired of accepting what we cannot change. That is out the window. That is not okay with me. And you have to understand, for someone who's been doing this in the mid-80s like myself, watching it go on, everybody, my son, who's very keen in psychology, said, Mom, everybody's either been sexually abused or they're a narcissist. He was 14 when he said that. yeah, exactly. He says, how can that be? And I'll tell you how it is. Because in 35 years, I've seen almost nothing change. And here's how
That's
bad
right.
it is. When I finished the in-demand program, which is also part of our prostitution, but guess what? That's part of prevention. They don't stop until they know why they do it, and that takes a clinical program. We have it. We sent the flyer out, no kidding, two falls ago, I guess, at this point. Late summer, early fall, 2 years ago, we sent the flyer out for the in-demand program, what it is, why it is, and how it can help. And these aren't guesses. These are proven. This program's been proven. So we sent 50 governors on their email, And then we got a hold of one of their social media accounts, and we posted the poster there. We ditto for all the 50 state attorneys, email, mm-hmm. and the social media. I would like to ask you or your listeners how many people, how many governors or state attorneys called and asked us about our program and the work we do.
Right, right.
Out of 50,
well,
so
unfortunately,
200 flyers, mm-hmm. it was zero. Tara, it was zero. The number is zero. Not one state attorney who got that flyer twice, and not one governor of these states got the flyer twice and never called us.
Right.
That's how I know how bad it is, and that's why I'm angry.
I understand your anger, and you know, let me say something. Mm-hmm. Then I want to go to mm-hmm. The panel, okay?
Sure.
First of all, they don't look. Look, we know that first-time offenders, okay, they offend 128 times, okay, before they
yep.
before they then they get caught, and they keep them in that bracket of 128
That's
times
for
first time offenders. Okay, this is the first time they got
right,
caught.
Right.
Now
and
I think that the first time offenders
that's not prosecuted. Yeah,
that, let
so
me
have
say
to take
something.
This program.
Yeah.
yeah.
Now the first time offenders, instead of getting a slap on the wrist, or maybe what
mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe a year in jail. Or
there
something,
it is.
Throw it
there
at
it
them. Throw
mm-hmm.
the book at them.
Exactly.
Like they were like
yep.
third to three-time offenders,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? Because if they stop at first-time offenders, yes, if they stop at the first-time offenders and really, really give it, you know, give
Correct.
Them 10 years, not 1 year, and they're not
mm-hmm.
going to do 10 years
mm-hmm.
anyway, but put them 10 years.
Again.
And
mm-hmm.
and maybe they'll slow down a little bit. I understand where you're coming from. Let me
mm-hmm.
let me go to
mm-hmm.
Kim, okay?
Sure.
Kim is our NASCA member.
Hi, Kim.
And I didn't know if she was hosting tonight, and she didn't know if whatever. But anyway, I'm hosting. So, Kim, so Kim, come on on.
Hi,
and maybe you have a question. Say hello to Jenny, okay?
Yeah, no. Hi, Jenny.
Again.
Hi, Jim.
I understand, your anger and frustration about the whole thing. And I do what I can. And, you know, that's all that you can do. Because, like you're saying, what is going to change is the prevention aspect. I mean, we've got to get
Correct.
Through to the adults, and
it has
the
to,
adults
and it has
understand.
To start with education. Yeah, that's an education
where,
program.
What they
the program
need,
we have
so,
healthy body, healthy mind.
Yeah.
And they're not teaching
right,
kids
absolutely.
How to do anything in health. There's no health sciences. There's no health class. There's no sex education in schools. The best way to
right.
reach the most kids is to do it through the schools, because they can't be allowed to keep
right.
learning from the internet and their dumb friends stuff that they should really have parents for, but they don't.
Well, with Aaron's law, they're supposed
reasons.
To be. Yeah. They're supposed
mm-hmm.
to be doing it in the school. So I get frustrated about that, too, because I'm always calling. And I do a program, Darkness to Light, the Stewards of Children. Have you heard of them?
Oh, okay. So when I started doing this work, specifically with sex abuse kids, you guys were the only
yeah.
other organization on the planet who talked about it. No kidding. I am honored.
Yeah, so they've come a long way.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
You need to get on their website.
I didn't have time to look.
A long way. Yeah, no, they're
yes,
facilitators
because it's
all
an
throughout.
Amazing job. Amazing
yeah,
job.
Throughout everywhere. And I am one of the
yes.
facilitator trainers as well. So I am blessed
mm-hmm.
to do that job because
mm-hmm.
I didn't speak out until I was 50 years old almost. And,
I'm sure.
You know, and that's normal. But what
yes.
I saw and what I was so impressed with this education was that I am educating the adults. And that's where we need to be.
Yes.
You know, yes, we need
yeah.
to educate
yeah.
children.
It's
as well,
the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I try and get into the schools as much as I can. I'm able to get more into preschools, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
The younger parents seem to be
oh,
a little bit more open.
Where
to
are
it,
you located?
Which is
where are you located?
I'm in
where generally
Littleton,
you live?
Colorado. Colorado.
Okay, so you're way out west, which is a lot more progressive than we are here. And we're not, the cops here are not allowed to carry our business cards or flyers. They're not allowed to carry the little Dollar Tree bags we got for, like, each age group, girl and boy. They're not allowed to do anything. And I literally had one in SWAT gear just cry one time because they don't do anything here. They do nothing.
That just breaks me.
why they're mad at me. Because I just got to keep doing it. So yeah, yes, that we talked about it when I used to go to schools all the time. They used to invite me every school, elementary or high school or middle, it didn't matter. And that was when we were so long ago. That's when we taught Stranger Danger. It wasn't until 12 months to that program where we analyzed the raw data, and it was determined that 95% of the offenders are the fathers in the home. Not uncle, brother, coach. We're talking the fathers. That was his first year. And so you could see how pervasive it was. We came up with definitions, the difference between molestation and abuse. We learned about child and child. We learned about a whole lot of stuff we didn't know. We learned that boys and men can be raped, and husbands can be raped. Nobody taught us that in the beginning. So I used to tell people, so after that 12 months, we thought, oh my God, it's not the guy in the white van. It's your dad, your brother. And remember, we watched some of these women. We knew the man raped the child. Scientifically, medically proven. But we watched them marry them. We watched them have more babies by them so they could abuse more of their children. The whole thing is just insanity. So then we started to touch bad touch. And when I moved to Canada, that's what I was teaching there as well. Because it's not the scary, spooky monster under the bed or in the closet. It's your brother, your uncle, your coach. I mean, it's everywhere. Cops, lawyers, judges, bankers, DCF. I mean, it's just, you know, no one's immune to it. And for something to be that pervasive and that damaging, and we can't even shift a little bit to start looking at the offenders in a different way, like, what? Why? Why? What are they so afraid of now that we'll go in and teach these kids? Like, seriously, like, what are they afraid of? They do not, they don't have parents. Part of the initiative is impaired parenting. And either you got parents that are, I'm going to be very kind about this, you got parents who are engaged in other things, social media, drama, blah, blah, blah. But what they're not engaged with is their children. And since we know it's so pervasive, we know there's a mother and a lot of them. I'd say one in every two moms and one in every two girls is now probably a victim of child sex abuse. And I'd say it's about one in three and a half boys now, considering we knew the stats that we created back in the 80s. It's not one in six. It's way less. It's way more. It's way less than that or more than that. It's almost as pervasive in males as it is in females. And again, a lot of those guys in jail and prison, a lot of them were victims. Who got into drugs or whatever, or the, you know, the criminal underworld to whatever they do, and now they're in jail. But they're not getting help either, and that's not okay either. So what are the schools afraid of that will go in and teach them how to take care of themselves? How about in the Healthy Mind or the Healthy Body, Healthy Mind program, do we outline clues and red flags to look at for a kid who might not be quite right? School shootings, 100% preventable. Child sex abuse, 100% preventable. Exploitation, 100% preventable. Trafficking, 100% preventable. None of these things are such set in stone that they cannot be changed. Except on child sex abuse, it hasn't changed. And here's the worst part, is that all these judges in their little chambers, all you have to do is put a program like ours on a piece of paper, because there aren't any others. Like, don't slap them on the wrist. Don't give them just a fine and let them out the door while you arrest the seller who can't afford it and is probably going to be in jail for whatever. Again, we're punishing the victims. We're not punishing the predators. We're not punishing the men who allow to give themselves permission to commit sex crimes when they buy. If you buy sex, spoiler alert, you're a sex offender, Robert Kraft.
That's right.
Epstein,
that's right.
Weinstein.
Let me say something.
Yeah,
Hold on a second, because I want to go to Nancy, because she is here. But I just want to say something about the Johns. All right, if the Johns were considered to be criminals, all right, and had to go to jail, okay. First of all, it would cut back on the Johns, and secondly, if there were no Johns, they wouldn't have a business, would they? No, they wouldn't.
Every man can end a man. Here's the thing. Most people don't know what the number one sex buyers are. And this is what this program does. It's a 19-module clinical social education and punitive program. And I have a list of the stupid crap men say during sessions. It's phenomenal. Like, oh, she wouldn't do it if she didn't like it. oh, I thought we were equal because I paid her money. Oh, I thought she could send it because I gave her money.
Mm-hmm.
No, 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 and no. Well, I go for companionship, get a dog. I mean, but they're not the typical, again, like the fathers we weren't aware of at the time, were going to be the 95% of the offenders in the home. And how do you stop that? We couldn't stop them from marrying them or having more babies by them. How do you stop that? Well, you put clinical programs in place based on experience, education, and training. And you take everything in that person's brain and you pick every detail out. Because what the number one buyers of sex are is not your typical goofy guy on the corner anymore. It is middle class to well-educated professional white men with wives and children and church and school and jobs and clubs and blah and blah and blah. But these high – so one of the things about knowing about who these men are tells you how you have to go about helping them understand they are giving themselves permission to commit a crime, not just a crime, an enhanceable offense, which is a sex crime. And again, they don't think they're doing anything wrong. Now, here's a fun fact. I'm not sure that you understand or your listeners fully understand why law enforcement continues, and this goes to speak to the victims are being punished and offenders are out and living free to offend yet. What they don't understand is why law enforcement is so keen on arresting the sellers opposed to the buyers.
That's right.
Hashtag follow the money. Hold on, I'm going to tell you. Because it takes 2 to 3, maybe 4 law enforcement officers to bust a seller. It takes 6 to 9 to bust a buyer. Yes, exactly. They're easy targets. And again, they're the ones going to jail. So all these judges, all these governors, all these state attorneys had to do was say, guess what? We got this lady, crazy as she might be, and she's got this program. And it could be pre-trial diversion, which is first time, second time sex buyers, a bad program. And finally, some of the states have some of them and not check their stats. And they're not, the programs are not great, like really not great. And they're not written by clinicians, no offense. But those programs are stopping sex crimes by like buying and selling about 60 to 70% in communities that are using a bad one. Our program has been every quarter for a couple of years now over 83% success rate of not reoffending or not going back to jail or not being rearrested. You know, they stay on probation while they take the program. We've asked to go into the jails because you know there's guys in there who not only were victims, but when they're an offender, you got to look up, you got to treat both. Pardon me, and that demand looks at all those things. Like, why do you make all these high decisions? You're a power player in your work. Pardon me. What is it you're actually going for? Like, why do you give yourself permission to commit a sex crime? So we go there. I'm a clinician. It's how we do it. So you go under all the noise, and there's a lot of reasons, and some that even sound legitimate compared to what I've already shared with you about the dumb things they say during sessions. Because it's really dumb. And not only do we talk about the offenders, for every module of the offender program, there's an equal module for the victim. So we're not just talking to the offenders about their bad behavior and tiss-tiss. We're talking to them about what reality is for your victim. And when you buy sex, you're a sex offender and you're creating a victim. You think you're buying a sex act or companionship or whatever it is you think you're going there for. She is selling or he is selling his soul. And when they hear you say it, and apparently I'm pretty good in person, and when they hear me say it, they hear us say it to them, you often see it, the light click on and an aha moment going, oh, my God, what have I been doing? And that's what we go over, the legal risk, the health risk for both offenders and victims. We go over the clinical work. How are your relationships? How are your relationships at work, at home? Because how are you and your kids getting on? Because oftentimes they just want a diversion from their life. Go to a freaking therapist already. That's what we're for. But you don't get to, now that they know the truth, they can't come back to us and say, gosh, I didn't know. Because when we know, the whole basis of the therapy is it's peace, and when we know better, we do better. So all of our programs are ACE informed, not trauma informed. They are ACEs informed because kids are not born bad, they're hurt. And then they grow up to be hurting adults. And we have to change the system somewhere. We're hoping and praying that the initiative is a global launch pad for a sustainable movement universally. Put kids first. Or how about, I don't know, when you were trained or you went to do your thing, but do you remember hearing best interest of the child? Mm-hmm. How about, I don't think I've heard that in years. Years, I don't think I've heard anybody say it. It used to be the standard for which we gave care, which we removed kids if necessary, which most of the time is not necessary. The parents need in-home help, and guess what? The mom's been sexually abused. So her children are vulnerable. It's
okay,
let me
stop you for a second here. Hold on a second,
sure.
Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I understand exactly what you're saying. But when you come right down to it, okay, and then I'm going to get to Nancy. When you come right down to it, a pedophile, okay, let's talk about a pedophile, all right?
Let's make sure your audience understands the true definition, because I hear the word thrown around quite a bit, and this is not anything against you. Make sure your audience knows that a pedophile is a paraphilia, like homosexuality. A pedophile is specifically a grown adult who has abnormal sexual desires for
mm-hmm.
prepubescent children.
That's correct.
Prepubescent
That's correct.
Children. There's a whole other category for adolescents,
Absolutely.
Older people.
That's right.
Yeah,
That's
they're
right.
all chronophilia. So mm-hmm. the pedophile program is what I'm going to be releasing. That's the one I've been working on for about 2 years.
Actually, I had two pedophiles in my family. I had two pedophiles.
No kidding.
One I know is dead.
That's pretty rare.
The other one, yeah, well, they weren't blood. But it was just through marriage. But the point is,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know.
They were
both after me. Isn't that nice? Listen to me.
Yeah, of course they
neither
were.
One of them changed.
They kept getting away with it. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? Nothing happens to them. They know that.
Well,
you know
nothing
I mean?
Happened to the one pedophile, because that was my brother, and I lived with him, so I know. And he never had to
mm-hmm.
pay for anything that he did, okay? My parents paid
Correct.
To make sure, that,
mm-hmm.
made sure that he didn't have to pay for anything he did, okay?
Mm.
That's terrible.
They never stop. Not without
okay.
control. They never stop. No.
That's right.
They never
now,
stop.
The other pedophile guy, no matter how many times he got beaten up, because that's what people would do in those days. They do street justice.
Yes.
Okay?
Oh, yes.
All right.
You wouldn't say this word in certain companies. I mean, seriously,
oh, yeah.
this was raw and real back then. You didn't say
oh, yeah.
these things in certain companies, right?
Well,
like,
let me tell
yeah,
you
and
something.
Now
Bones heal, mm-hmm. and then, you know, they go their way, they move, and they continue
mm-hmm.
their nastiness.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get Nancy on here, because she hasn't had a chance to speak yet. Nancy, go ahead.
Hi, Nancy.
Nancy?
Hello, ladies. Hello. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Go ahead.
Hi, Nancy. Well, there was a lot going on, so
welcome to my world.
I kind of forgot it a little bit, but ask me probably something in regards to what we're talking about, so I could come back, because it was a lot.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Miss Carol.
No, Miss
Carol.
Oh. Yeah,
well,
I was gonna say, I'm not in charge, but I'm okay with that. But I'm not
yes,
in charge.
Yes, ma'am. You can help me. Help me share something. Let me tell you that. Because I did have some questions, but it was a lot going on. So
mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah,
I know. There's a lot being spoken about here. Go ahead.
Right. No, I think if anybody peeled off the top of my head and looked in my brain, I think they'd be very afraid.
So what is it that you want to ask, Jennifer? Do you want to be called Jenny or Jennifer?
Jenny is what I'm usually referred to. Yeah.
No, that's
ma'am.
Actually
what you yeah, I should have wrote down.
No,
some,
it's fine.
Some
okay,
questions.
All right, honey. Well, I haven't forgotten to you. I was just trying to get to you, all right? All right.
Yes,
all
ma'am,
right.
yes, ma'am.
Yes. But anyway, this is a very interesting thing, because there's two schools of thought, okay, with the pedophiles. Now, pedophiles is pedophilia, and yes, they're for prepubescent
mm-hmm.
Children. And a lot of us
Correct.
On NASCA have been, of course, in that
yes.
position where we had the pedophiles asterisk.
Right.
Now,
yes.
I have never known of any program, I have to say this, I have never known of
mm-hmm.
any program that because I even called one in Avalon, New Jersey, and they housed pedophiles, okay, 15-year-old pedophiles.
Oh, okay. Dear Lord.
Yeah. Mm. So, you see, the difference is when they're that age. I mean, what they're trying to do in that particular organization, I'll call it an organization, is to work with kids who have the tendencies. They got caught. That's why they're there. They got caught.
Right. So I've been working with two male adolescents and an adult male for about 3 years. And I can tell you it has to be done. One, we don't have the right to call ourselves mental health professionals about anything if we don't offer these kids who are born this way. They know, like homosexuals know. They're just wired differently. And that has been my personal experience with paraphilias and my professional experience. And so it matters. So as far as I'm concerned, I've been writing it. I needed an assistant more than my next breath. Let me just throw that out there. It's about kids, so I'm shameless, I'll beg. But it would have been done by now. But all the research is done, and they know. And so here's what we're doing. It works along with the in-demand, too. It's a preventative measure. Although we have to make certain allowances for them to be able to release their urges in a healthy way. And I know that sounds strange, but you can't get rid of this for them. And they know. I've talked to homosexual people, knew they're 4, 5, 6 years old. These kids, they knew. And so what they're doing is they're watching online child porn. Now, is that our ultimate, is it disgusting and heinous? Yes. But if that prevents them from going out and committing a lie is what we call a child that they have looked at, they've been grooming or they're looking at, and they're going to sexually abuse that child. Okay, that's what we call a lie. We put measures, and so you got to know this, homosexuality wasn't even say the last 20 years, let's look back. Homosexuals couldn't get married, they didn't have legal standing with partners they weren't married to, they didn't get health insurance or life insurance, they couldn't see people in the hospital, et cetera, et cetera. And the voice in their head on the tape of their brain is, I'm a beast, I'm a monster, I'm awful, I'm disgusting, nobody will love me, why do I feel this way, I'm a girl, I should like boys, I don't. Okay, so they consider pedophile children and how heinous a crime it is and how they wear that. They are saturated in it. And it is devastating for them. They have nowhere to go. So when you said there is no other program you've ever heard of, that's because it doesn't exist. That's why I'm writing it. And people are going to be very upset with me, and I just cannot worry about what other people think. These kids need tools and systems and strategies in place to understand what they are, what they aren't, to erase the tape of I'm a monster, et cetera, ad nauseum, because that's all they hear. And then they're reaffirmed when they get an erection because they're watching child porn online. But we know that's not going to last because we know they're going to go into puberty. Now, let's talk about testosterone and the pituitary gland and everything that is going to do to a child who knows there's not, they believe it's something wrong with them. So now
the child
knows that
Tommy's 15. They know that.
No, honey, I'm telling you, they know from a tiny age, 4, 5, 6 years old.
Six and five. Okay, go ahead.
I know so. Two subjects. 6 years old and 5 years old both knew there was something wrong with them. That's their narrative. That's what they say to me. How did you know? And the interviews over a couple of years has given me a tire. It has to be done. We don't have the right to call ourselves mental professionals of any kind or collaborative at all if we don't provide the service to them. Because here's what happens when testosterone and puberty kicks in. We know how porn kills love, right? So we know that. With video games and pornography, you can start very vanilla, I guess the kids call it, you know, kind of missionary. But as you're porn, you will have to increase either the number of people in your videos you're watching to get a stimulation, or you're going to have to up the violence against the women or what have you, and it goes on and on. It's worse. Just like drugs work on the shut of the brain, porn works in the same way, just like a narcotic or an opiate. So the minute you don't have it, boom, but it's not always going to work. So the same thing happens to these kids. So if puberty hits and hormones hit them, first of all, nobody's talked to them. They have nobody to go to. They suffer this in almost total isolation in their bedrooms, under their bed sometimes, some on a bunk bed with a sheet over them so that nobody catches it and calls them a freak or a monster. That is not okay. They're hurting. And we have to be to stop that between the little guy who knows all age-appropriate stages. So the little guy that knows at 4, 5, 6 years old, I'm not exaggerating that. Those are our records. And these are some statistics that I carried over from the agency I worked at in the 80s. I'd already been the sex therapist, but when I started professionally, and I was honored and privileged to have gone through that. So when you look at the industry, so we have an age-appropriate program that deal with the little guys who know, and how do we keep them from Johnny touching Johnny on the playground, which is different than, say, an experimental age. So we go through what are the actual sexual developmental stages of children and adolescents. So we get them right before, so the pre-pubescent, we get them right before hormones hit. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of, and so we are adding different tools and strategies that are age-appropriate to not have to up the ante when they watch that online child porn, and maybe keep that progression to a possible live hidden and kept back. Does that make sense? So we're trying to put tools in place so that they don't ultimately commit a live, and maybe we can prevent them from doing it altogether. In my opinion, if we prevent one kid who thinks he's a monster but has no other help, no one to talk to, he won't talk to anybody at school, he won't talk to his friends, he won't talk to his parents, he doesn't talk to anybody. But he talks to other pedophiles online, and they aren't kids. They're adults. And now they're being exploited, and they're being trafficked. And they're vulnerable because they have nowhere else to go. Shame on us. Shame on us for not doing it sooner.
It all starts out with environmental conditioning, okay, in the home. And
it's not nature versus nurture. It's nature and nurture. And 70 mm-hmm. parents are extremely ultra-conservative, and some of them aren't. But that doesn't stop the progression of the urges and desires they have. They get perfectly rounded families, but everybody's going to call them a monster. You're different. You're wired differently. It's that simple. Help them understand who they are. Again, what are we so afraid of in school? Why do we not have a program that healthy body, healthy mind? We can prevent school shootings. We can prevent hurting kids from suicide. We can prevent hurting kids from committing their own offenses, which, by the way, not a lot of research backs that up. Just because you were sexually abused does not mean you're going to become a predator. And here's another keynote I want your listeners to understand. Not every child that was sexually abused as a child or exploited as a child was exploited or abused by a pedophile. Okay, I'm going to say that again because I know I talked back. Not every child that was sexually abused or exploited in childhood was abused or exploited by a pedophile. Sometimes the children are just objects of opportunity. And again, one of the things we'll be seriously defining are all the different types of paraphilias in our PIP. It's called the Personal Intimacy Program. And I'm over the moon about it. And I kind of kept it under wraps because
what you just said.
Yes, ma'am.
That's floating around in my head. Hold on a second. Okay. I think you just said that not every child who is sexually abused, say, they're walking the street, whatever, and all of a sudden it's the boogeyman, we'll call him that, you know, jumps out. I don't mean the guy from behind the bush because that's only 10%. No.
Right.
What I'm talking about here is that you said that they are not always pedophiles. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Who would do that?
That's absolutely 100% correct.
Okay.
Just
what would
they
do then? All right. What would you call them?
They would be a rapist. Again, the definition is what we have to hold on to. I've had to tell 6 people this year already, stop throwing that word around. You're not using it correctly. A pedophile's specific paraphilia means they're wired this way. And again, clinical things can change it, but behavior management, we can do those things. It is a person, an individual who is abnormally sexually attracted to prepubescent children.
Right.
There are all kinds of paraphilias. So not every child who was sexually abused was abused by a pedophile. It was okay, that child was a means of opportunity, which makes them a regular run-of-the-mill rapist.
Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. No, let me get this clear. Okay, now, if that person, you say that, you know, the kid is there, so there's the opportunity. If he or she, we have to talk about she's too, you know, because they're the female ones. So if they're not.
No, the boys. There is almost as many boys who are victimized the same way.
Okay, wait a minute. So I'm trying to get this straight in my head. So if they're not a pedophile, why would they then thirst? I mean, the opportunity wouldn't be in their mind, okay, because they wouldn't
Carol,
be interested. You know what I'm saying?
That's a fantastic question, and I have the answer for you. Because sexual assault and rape, no matter what the age of the victim, is not about sex. It's about power, control, manipulation, and humiliation. The gender or age of the victim matters not. It has nothing to do with them.
Okay.
It only happens to be that somebody who was not abnormally sexually attracted to prepubescent kids is just your run-of-the-mill horrible, heinous rapist. And then we take this. As a matter of fact, here's another fun fact. Paraphilias are about the only quote-unquote sex crimes that are about sex.
Right.
Pedophilia is about sexual gratification. Homophobia, or I'm sorry. Homosexuality is about sexual gratification. Everything else has nothing to do with sex or sex acts. It's only about power, control, humiliation, and manipulation.
Right.
Nothing else.
Now, that I believe because of situations I've been in, other
it's
people I know on the show, it is
it is
about power and control.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what they say. That's,
and you
and
made
I,
it,
I used to,
asking
you know,
the question. You're asking the question is brilliant. You're asking the question is brilliant and very keen because it is a very important distinction. And here's another myth that we're trying to bust. They talk about sex trafficking and human trafficking. First of all, 4 years undercover investigations, and we're about to start publishing some of our results, and the results are repugnant. They're absolutely repugnant. And in my opinion, they're worse than the pimp traffickers and handlers because some of these victims go to these agencies and these groups for help, and they don't have any help. So they're lying. They can't verify their stats. Nobody's calling. It's all a smoke and mirrors. So we're trying to bust some myths. So the thing about trafficking I've been listening to, which, by the way, is not new, I was really kind of like, what are you guys talking about? None of this is new. We call them pimps. That's what we always called them. But now it's all about money, and so the devil's got everybody looking that way. It's all science, and the rest of us on the other side jumping up and down screaming, saying, could we get a little bit of change, please? Could we just arrest and prosecute the offenders and maybe keep them in jail for a little bit, make them take a program? And because that money subsidizes the victim services, and we don't ever charge a penny, not for any sex crime work, no matter what we're doing, we absolutely charge nothing, zero. So the end-demand programs help subsidize that. I've been working for free for 4 years. But here's another myth I started seeing. Well, first of all, I went to a couple trainer training things, and what I noticed immediately is there were no boys. The males and the boys were not mentioned, not even once. That I found concerning. And then the other thing that everybody is so keen on doing is the grooming of children. Let me explain that clearly to your listeners and to anybody else who might be confused. The only two points. Number one, the only thing that makes your child vulnerable to an online trafficker or pimp is getting raped in their own home, in their own bed, by someone they know and supposed to be able to trust. Number one, they're only vulnerable when that happens to them. Otherwise, they're like, girl or dude, go away. You know, they got attitude. They're not going to have that crap. Now, put a child's been raped. If the parents want that to happen to them, how much protection does that kid have? None. Zero. So he doesn't care about your trafficking story. The grooming happens with the mothers, the single mothers who were sexually abused as children and did not get any clinical help. A predator will go where it is to find its prey. These are predators for whatever their purpose, whether it's power control or whether it's a sex. They're predators. We know that. They will go where they have prey. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So they go and they live and they work in communities like ours that are lax on the laws and even laxer on enforcement. And again, let's go back to all the state attorneys have to do is put our name on a piece of paper in front of a judge. That's all they have to do. The judge can look at it and go, hey, guess what? We'll take this program online. They look like they might be doing some good work and help pay for some of the victims. So the mothers are groomed more often than the children. The mothers, they're single. I'm a single mom. Did you do single mom, Carol, or Nancy, or Kim?
Oh, yeah, no. I was off and on single. Yeah, off and on single.
Me
yeah.
too. I was married and single mom. And one, we're exhausted. Two, it's insanity, single parent. Three, decision overload is the one thing, is the number one thing that stresses and exhausts single parents and single mothers. So we're tired. And so for those victims as children who grew up to be, remember, they look like adults. They wear adult clothes. They might do some adulting things, but they're not. They're still 12 and 13, so they're still pre-puberty, some of them. That's their mental and emotional, that is their range because nobody stepped in to help them. So a predator can smell them 1,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. Easy. Easy. They know how to
okay,
talk
so
to
that's,
them.
Okay, so that's the way
it's Yes.
Okay,
uh-huh.
This is why, and I'm going to go to Kim. This is why what we do on NASCA, and you know this, is we're mm-hmm. trying to teach. We're trying to teach. Now, I'm going to say, you know, and sometimes people get mad at me, and I really don't care, you know. But, in good homes, okay, in good homes, mm-hmm. in other words, where parents are doing the best they can to educate their children, not just across the street and all this other stuff.
Right.
Or about the guy who's going to jump out behind the bush. But, in good homes, they have to learn. Again, we do not live in an innocent world. So these good parents, it is, suggested that they role play. And because a lot of times parents don't like to talk to their children. I heard this just a couple days ago. I got so mad I had to walk out of a store. People were talking.
I have a poster. I know. I have a poster that addresses
really
exactly
angry,
what you're
so
about to
I
say.
Left because I figured I might have to go to jail or something. I don't know. I was getting really mad. So anyway, we don't live in an innocent world. So we have to prepare our children, not just across the street, but to all the other things that are going around us.
All of them.
Right.
All of them. It doesn't take very long for a teenager or a preteen to learn, dude, that dude is playing you. Because here's what happens to your teen girl, one of them. She tells her teen girlfriend, dude, if he says that, he's lying. And you know they're going to shake their head. And you know what I mean. They're going to be like one girl to another, and then we have a whole bunch of girls who won't buy their crap or won't be vulnerable to them, even if they had been victims already. So there's prevention. So protection comes along because if they got hurt before, we got a hold of them. And that's pretty much, like I said, the stats are just probably 1 in 2 girls, 1 in 3.5 boys, if that, sexually abused or exploited children. So that's protection. If we didn't get to them, how do we help them heal? And those programs are written in there. And so even just a couple of girls, and here's the thing, Florida did something really fun. Oh, I don't know if you're following DeSantis, but he's about to make my head explode. He's horrible. He's decided that we can't go and teach anybody anything in school. We're not allowed to talk about gender. We're not allowed to talk about sex. We're not allowed to talk about anything. I don't need Governor DeSantis' permission to teach children how to prevent them getting sexually abused or abused at all. However, right before COVID, I want to say, there was a bill passed here, which, of course, made my head want to explode, that mandated human trafficking courses in schools for all Florida children. Someone called me and texted me and said, oh, bunch of people, aren't you excited? I said, are you out of your mind? Listen to me. What's going to happen? Follow me down this little path because I'm going to show you how this is going to go. You're going to have 200 students in the gymnasium with one idiot and a slideshow who knows nothing more than cut and paste off the internet. And every 1 in 2 of those little girls in that gymnasium and every 1 in 3.5 boys in those seats has already been raped at home. Raped at home. And they don't give a rat's ass about your human trafficking talk. Mm-hmm. They want to know,
did you say
where the hell is
ass?
Everybody?
My mother used to say that.
Yes,
did you say rat's ass?
Sorry. Yes.
That's funny.
I have an old soul. They don't care. They will not listen. You will be tuned out because all they really want to do is stand up and scream and cry and say, why is somebody not doing something to keep me from having sex with my dad or my brother or my uncle or my coach?
That's right.
Yeah. That's what it's going to be like. So your human trafficking legal bullshit is a waste of time and energy. We need to get to them before that. And so even the state is not, like, on board. No wonder they don't want the governor doesn't want our end-demand program. Ashley Moody doesn't want it. No, Senator Bill Nelson, we approached him too. None of our lawmakers in Florida. And I really ticked off three different state attorneys around me. Miami-Dade, West Palm Beach, and, of course, the beautiful state attorney here in South of Florida who loves me so much. It's ridiculous. And so what we have discovered is that the human trafficking statistics are a lie. Most of it's a lie.
Well, I do know that if we teach our children, okay, the red flags that we speak about on NASCA,
right.
You know, what
right.
to look out for
right.
from adults,
mm-hmm.
and also, too, even older children, if we teach them the red
yes.
flags,
yes.
all right, that's
yes.
imperative. That's imperative that we do
right.
that. And
right.
Now, look, I told a story a couple weeks ago on the radio and where a child had been spoken to by her parents about the good, the bad, and the ugly, okay? And quite frankly, this kid was prepared. Two guys were approaching her.
Yes.
And they'd been going around and around and around. She was in the complex type thing. And
they were going
to nab her. They were going to take her, okay?
Absolutely.
And she was outside with friends. And she saw them. They kept coming closer and closer and closer. And all of a sudden, she said, everybody scream. And
oh,
the kid, the one guy, check it out.
Awesome.
The one guy got too close to her, and she kicked him in the shin. And,
oh,
and
good girl.
Everyone was screaming. And, well, that brought all the adults out, okay? And now someone called 911. Someone called 911, and they were caught before they left that complex. There was a car right in the area.
Praise the Lord, and whoever she is and her parents,
yes,
that was a contact
this is
me.
Why, this
that's
is
what
why
I'm talking about. That's
so
what I'm talking
about. Prevention, right.
Yes, that's what I'm talking
right.
about. That little girl trusted her gut knew what to look for.
Yeah.
Hi, Kim.
Yeah, let's put Kim on. Go ahead.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I...
Hi.
Well, I'm just listening to all of your everything that you're saying and all the struggles that you're having there, and I know that Colorado isn't perfect, but we are opening up to the idea of we need to get education, we have a grant actually from the Colorado Department of Education
nice.
To do these classes. And so Denver Public Schools have now asked us to come in and educate the teachers. So if we could get that to the rest of the school, I'd be a little better. And I've been trying to talk to all the schools
right.
that my grandkids are in. I'm over there talking to them, and they're like, yeah, sounds
right.
good. But, until they're made to do it, they're not going to do it. And so,
I don't understand.
It shouldn't be that way. It just shouldn't. That's just not. They should be open to whatever it takes to keep the kids safe. And So I'm sorry. That you're having all those struggles. That, and it's not just you though.
I'm not talking about me. Oh yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm just one little instrument. That's all. When I speak of myself or us, it's not about me. It's about the learning I've done, the experience, the training stuff I've done, and that person, whoever that person is. It's not really about me personally. I just, God gave me this assignment, and I've just kind of been going with it. Nobody would have picked it. I didn't pick it. I knew counseling kids. That's it. I didn't have any idea. And then if you look at my backstory, you'll be like, oh, that best friend in school was sexually abused. That one was sexually abused. When I started, I had four women from the same family in my therapy office. And then 30 years later, 4 years ago, when I opened my nonprofit, I had four women from the same family again. From 1987 to 2018. Sex abuse and rape and sexual assault of women. I'm not sure I've ever met anybody who hasn't experienced some sort of sexual violence against them. And I'm just not going to be okay with not making schools pay attention. I mean, we can't get the governors and state attorneys to punish these guys. 1987 to 2022. That's how long I've been doing this. And we've seen almost no change. Why? Why is that? So it's a shift. There needs to be a shift in mentality. And a lot of things need to change in the United States. For example, like in Canada, they give you enough assistance. I don't mean just financial or food. I'm talking about enough resources and assistance to get you off assistance. In the United States, they only give you enough to stay on it. So when I talk about poverty, which is the number one contributing factor to all abuse, but specifically child sex abuse. And why? Because mom was abused and didn't get help, which makes her a target, which makes her children vulnerable, which is how they get hurt. Here, you stay on it. Generation after generation after generation, no hope for the future, no goals, no dreams. Don't think that for yourself or your children you can do any better than what your mom and grandma or grandma did. And we've all experienced the same thing, some sort or some degree of sexual violence. I recently had a friend who was drinking and decided when I was leaving his company and I was coming back to my house, who wanted some kind of kiss or something, and I had been very clear, not happening, and he pinned me up against the wall on the door. I elbowed that son of a gun in the nose. Uh-uh. That is a form of sexual violence. I was so mad and so angry, I didn't speak for 2 days. And you've met me. My son's met me. I don't ever stop talking. 2 days, I could barely speak. That's a form of sexual violence too. When you make Donnie or Susie or Sally hug a relative or a friend or what have you, that's a form of sexual violence. That teaches them they don't have the right to say and do with their body what they want. We don't want that. And a lot of people just don't even know that. In terms of therapy and counseling, it's more important to know what not to say to a sex crime victim than what to say. So all of these things are things that people have not heard before, possibly, or not heard and often enough. And I'm just going to keep shouting it from the rooftop until we get some of this done. And sadly, it's going to take every one of us. It's going to take us probably working ourselves into the ground. And some of us won't be here when the big shifts happen, like with our initiative. We know that some of these things are going to take longer to get done than others. But when we go home to Jesus, where we belong, and every one of us is a believer, 1,040 members now, we know that we blaze the trail so that the generations that come behind us can say they did the best they could with what they had, and this is how we keep going to reach that goal. And so all of this is about education. That is our most preventative tool, education. But that means the prostitution and a clinical program educates the buyers and the traffickers, because they can take this in their prison too. Any sex offender can take this program. It doesn't matter where they are. So it can be used for all the ranges of sex offenders. And just re-educating people about what sex crimes really are, why they are, and to focus and to bust those myths that we talked about tonight, which I'm so grateful for an opportunity to do so on a wider scale. I used to tell people I get looked at when I talk like I have like 6 heads. Now I'm a tall, skinny, white girl, but I don't have 6 heads. And I got a message from the Holy Spirit said, listen, you are so far ahead of everybody, they don't know what you're talking about. And I took that to heart. I was like, oh. Because I talk about this stuff like I'm ordering a pizza. I mean, it's not what I do. It's ingrained in who I am, and I sometimes have to remind it to not talk about it. But it's for kids. They're our greatest resource, and that's not just a cliche. It's not just a slogan. It matters. And kids are not being raised. They're being left to their own devices, and I'm not just talking about the kids who are now, right now, elementary, middle, or high school, or college. I'm talking about the children who are in their 20s and 30s who aren't getting it right either. because we've had a couple decades of not parenting. That's not okay. No fathers. That's one of our big initiatives. And there are several legislative issues we're going to be working on, like parental alienation, which in my opinion is a psychological and emotional rape. So I put it right there next to sex crimes, victims and offenders. It is an absolute, absolute emotional and psychological rape. And I can tell you because I had three generations in my family, and we went through it as kids when it didn't have a name. So I'm going to be talking about that more on another couple podcasts coming up. But so we're going across the board, but we start with education. Educate the offenders. Why are you doing this? Stop. Just stop it. Just stop. There are other ways. Kids, what does that guy on the internet really mean? What is that? Because it's not just the internet. These kids have phones and burner phones. They have pornography. They have violent pornography in the palm of their hands. We are using our sex and porn addiction module from the end-demand program and the PIP program on our adult, wait a minute, and our adolescent male clients. And we do that for free, too. So I've been working for free for about 4 years. And I'm not complaining. It was essential that I did that to get everything that God wanted me to do in the last 4 years. And now finally I'm able to speak more about it, which is why it took so long to get back on the Bill Murray Show and the NASCAR Show. It's just such an honor to talk to other survivors and just people who I know in their heart of hearts, they have been hurting. They have been hurt badly. But we come together and we share the space of survivorship. We share the space of healing ourselves, forgiving ourselves, for letting go of the shame that is absolutely not ours. And that goes for sex crime victims or parental alienation victims. That kind of way that sucks out a soul of a human being on either side is devastating. And most of the time I've been doing it so long, I don't even have to ask. I can see it in their eyes. There's a void, or there's a hole. You can feel the hole in their heart where humans should have been. And here's the really, really, I think, something that we do really differently than other places, only because I've been doing it so long. The first thing I tell kids and their mothers, because I get the kids first, and I know the mothers haven't had help, so they come too. I say to them, welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm so glad to meet you. Let me just tell you, oh, I'm going to cry, that I'm very, very sorry that the adults in your life didn't do a better job protecting you. But we're going to get that, and we're going to get healing, and you are going to be better, and this is going to change everything. And if they believe in the person they're telling their story to, they believe that there's hope. It's all about faith and hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you something there. Do you honestly believe, now, you gave us a little bit before that you had a pretty high success rate, okay, of working with the people that were, you know, in this category that you're speaking of in scope.
Mm-hmm.
With the ones that don't, you know, are not successful, all right, and they do, repeat and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about those people? Because each time they repeat, many times,
what happens
is they get worse. That's why there's tier threes.
Okay.
There's tiers one, two, and three in jail for some, you know, I know this because I worked it.
Right.
Yeah. So
what
do you, you know, this
so
is a...
we're talking about...
Go ahead.
Okay, so if we're talking about pedophiles specifically, that's a different answer than other sex crimes offenders. So do you want me to answer for each of those categories? I'm going to put it to you this way. I was so mad that none of the state attorneys and those governors didn't even call. They didn't say thank you for the message, blah, 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 that I put out a new poster that says like this. I'm going to break it down for you. If you bring a new puppy home from the pound and it pees on your carpet and you don't do anything, how many times is that puppy going to pee on your brand new carpet?
Continuously.
Forever. Until you smack it on the ass or the nose. And don't call me. I'm not into animal cruelty. But whatever. I'm a cat person. I love critters. But I'm a cat person. I don't care how you train your dog. But until you give that dog, that puppy, a consequence or another way to go, which means outside, So when we deal with addicts, you can get the drugs out of the system. That's not hard to do at all. It's not easy for them, but it's not hard. But until you get rid of what's hurting them inside that made them self-medicate, guess what? You're not doing them any good. Zero. You're not helping them at all. So it all goes down to what is happening on the inside of these people. And how. And so pedophiles, you have to remember, their goal is sexual gratification. Other sex trans offenders are not about sex at all. So you're looking at very, very different answers. And they don't change without tools and strategies. People will tell you when you get out of a rehab, don't go back to your old life. You got to go to a new life now without all those other people. Because all those other people that got you in this mess, they're still going to be doing the same thing a year, 3 years, 5 years from down the road if they're still alive. And they have an overdose on fentanyl-laced crack or meth or whatever they do, right? Mm-hmm. So you can take the addict out of the body, but you can't until you address the pain. That addict is always going to be an addict, and they're going to keep self-medicating. So it's a clinical approach. It's based on ACEs. It is based on adverse childhood experiences. Nothing more soul-sucking than child sex abuse and exploitation. Nothing, except parental alienation, which is, again, like in my clinical opinion, is a psychological and emotional rape. What those parents do for attention, which is what it's all about anyway, and how DCF is legally kidnapping children using the same toxic tactics. Oh, girl, don't even get me started. That's a whole other show. So we look at what is the motivation. Is it gratification? Well, if it's something else, why is it something else? What is it? Why do you seek power? Why do you seek control? We can't cure them. Aversion therapies do not work. They're born this way. But they don't stop unless they have clinical behavior modification. So we look at the behavior and we look at the motivation. You don't do anything without a payoff, quoting Dr. Phil, which is true. Nobody does. So what is the payoff? Why do these high-priced upper-class billion-dollar, sometimes huge mega corporation running Forbes 500 guys, why do they give themselves permission to go commit a sex crime? Don't you think we should explore that a little bit? Sometimes it's because they can be submissive. It's not about sex at all. It's just because they don't have to make any more decisions, which is really interesting. But you only get that when you dive into the clinical psyche. So we look at the motivation. Then we look at how do we change that and why we want to and why we need to. Well, sex crimes or offenders, those are crimes. We don't want to hurt these people anymore, and I don't care how much money you give her. It's not consent. And this is why. So we work on that. So when they know why they're doing it, it's like, oh, maybe I should just get a dog. I don't know. Perhaps. Right? So then they get a totally different perspective. It's an education. So then we put in strategy. Then we put in something to replace that behavior. So a puppy, a dog, don't let it pee on your carpet, a friend, a men's group at church, whatever. There are a gazillion ways to not go buy sex from a sex seller and commit a sex crime. Gazillions of ways. So we replace that. Same with an addict. You have to replace the people, and you have to replace the habit. Sometimes people stay addicted to drugs or cigarettes or drinking because there is a addiction to the process. Opening a voyeur, opening a bottle of wine, getting their needle or whatever they call it ready, that kind of thing. So that sometimes, and so you have to replace that. I know smoking, my mother tried to quit smoking cigarettes with every tool on the planet, could not do it. So it literally killed her. And at one point I remember her, we remember saying, they told me to put a pencil in my mouth between my teeth every time I wanted a cigarette. She said, Jenny, I don't want to eat any pencils. I said, oh my God. So we have to replace that behavior. Same thing with sex buyers, same thing with sex offenders, same with trafficking, and when you look at the trafficking and the pimps and the handler type situations, you have to know right off the bat, they may not give a rat's ass, there is again, what you have to say to them, but what they cannot do, same with these men who need to take this program, they cannot say, they can never say again that they did not know the harm they were causing or risks they were putting their own families through and communities through by engaging in this behavior.
Well, okay.
Or they don't stop.
Okay. We know about the Johns, okay, and I think that they're equally as guilty because supply and demand, I hate to put it that way, okay?
Now, no, that's exactly what it is. It's that simple.
Well, that's what it is. And now with the pimps, right. it's a business to them. They have no conscience. See,
correct.
My concern about
exactly.
Right. My concern is sociopaths and psychopaths. They had, especially the psychopaths, they have no conscience. And when I was talking about environmental conditioning
correct.
Before, you will find with
mm-hmm.
the sociopaths,
mm-hmm.
they will go out and murder someone, say they're gang-related, and they're told to go and murder someone. They don't have any conscience whatsoever because that's what they have to do. That's the way they were brought up in their environment, in their home, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, with the
right.
psychopaths,
right.
they have absolutely no, they can't fall in love, they can't feel love, they can't feel remorse,
nope.
they can't feel anything,
nope.
nothing,
nope.
not a zip zilch,
that's
okay?
Correct.
Now,
that's correct.
Or the Greystone, I know this, all right.
But
so,
that's not why they do it.
Is,
that's not why they do
okay.
it, though. Isn't that interesting? It's true, you're absolutely correct, but that's not why they do what they do.
No, that's a business
again,
deal.
You're looking at the, you have to look at, right, exactly. So they may not care what they hear in the drafting program or in the module,
right.
so what?
Mm-hmm.
They can't say they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And same with family.
A sociopath
parent.
Can be worked with, all right, if you don't get them too late. They can be.
Well,
that's... It's kind of hard,
yeah,
I know. A psychopath,
well,
definitely not. They have good
right.
jobs. They have good cars. They seem like the pillar
right.
of societies. I think in our Justice Department,
exactly.
we have psychopaths. We do. And so, therefore, you know, they present
we got them
themselves.
Everywhere.
Yeah, that's another subject right there. But
right.
that's how they present themselves, you know, as a pillar of society, and they have no conscience.
Right.
So
right.
what you're trying to tell us here on the show is that those people, okay, who do go out and who do offend, they came from a certain type of background, and a lot of times it starts at home. We know this. And there was no one there for
mm-hmm.
them because they were supposed to go out and do certain things,
often.
And they were exposed to pornography, they were exposed to this, all kinds of sex
mm-hmm.
acts and all this
mm-hmm.
other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere down the line, if they're not too broken, and someone like your organization gets a hold of them, maybe, just maybe, there's hope for them. I
mm-hmm.
don't know. If there
you
is...
Know.
Then that would help.
Yes.
That would help, you know, maybe put that dent in the statistics that I keep talking about. I don't
correct.
Know if there's hope for them.
Because we can change. We're changing them. We're not just talking about them. We're changing
okay.
statistics. But the people who have the power to make change happen are refusing,
mm-hmm.
literally refusing to listen to the people who know how to make the change and why, like our programs. We have a child welfare diversion program. This is a limited crisis intervention program. Every quarter, we have an over 80% success rate of keeping children in the home or reuniting them had they been separated prior to our involvement. 83% is our very, very much child welfare here doesn't want it. They won't touch it. And that goes back to intervention. Most kids in crisis as mothers who are single, working, sometimes going to school, they're tired. I think we covered this. That is a shining star to a predator. But most of them don't need to have their children removed from the home. Most of them don't. What they need are a clinician like myself and a specifically trained family support worker. That's our family preservation program. That's a more long-term program with the same issues. And, you know, by this time, usually, you know, this is when DCF has been involved, cops have been involved, schools have been involved, and we're kind of like the last road for people to get help. 83% rate every quarter of keeping them in the home. Are you kidding? These are soul-driven programs, like up in Canada. Not dollar-driven programs.
I can see that failure. Okay. See, I wouldn't send someone back to a toxic background where they could very easily fall back because they're not quite strong enough yet.
Oh, no,
say,
no.
In recovery.
Okay. No. Right. Okay. So we have to assess them clinically. Are they appropriate or eligible for the shorter-term program? Or is this a systemic problem in the family that needs a greater and longer rate of involvement? So the family preservation program is the longer involvement with the family. The child welfare diversion program is like a pre-child diversion program. you do this work with this support worker, you see that therapist, you work on your goals and get stuff done, and frankly, most issues are the same, especially if you're involving teenagers, which usually there are, and you get there, and they're like, F you at the door, or take my kid won't listen, blah, blah, blah. I said, guess what? I am not here to parent your child. We're going to help you learn how to parent that child better. Not my job to raise your kids. Your job to raise your kids.
Right.
And you're struggling. So let's put those resources inside the home. And let's get a clinician, because most of mothers, again, living in poverty and are victims of child sex abuse and exploitation. And so
the ones in poverty, many times, they're the ones that put them out on the street.
That's what I mean. The Child Welfare Diversion Program doesn't. Well, these were going after DCF and foster care, too. First of all, people are just learning that the average brain doesn't even stop developing till mid-20s. And we're aging out kids who have no love, no life skills, don't have squat, because foster care is not meeting their demands. The group homes, nobody's trained. This is where my training comes in, because this is where I do the work with the kids. And it is not very hard to relate to kids or connect with children in a meaningful way very quickly, mostly just acting like them. But, hey, guess what? Because you know what happens? Our number one goal when we get to a family like this is to support the parental role and the parents being in charge. Because by the time we got there, the dynamics, the kids are in charge and no longer the mothers. The kids are in charge, which is not okay. So when those children find out that we're not there to nitpick their behaviors or go after them as if they're the problem, we're going after your parents, because you're the ones that the adults have run the sailing into a ditch, not us, not your children. So we're going to change, we're going to switch that dynamic, and we're going to put you back in charge. I can't get him to do anything. Oh, watch me. You can. Again, actions, consequences, behavior modification. I can't say it enough. That's the clinical work. And then for things like life skills, the mother may not know
how to
love
structure, though.
Right.
It's the whole family structure that has to be addressed, okay?
Right.
Not just
so
the kids.
One
not
of our
just
biggest
the behavior of the kids. You have to really work with
the
whole family
structure.
It's not the
kids. It's not the children. It's the adults.
Of course.
It's the adults who have to work with.
That affects the children.
But the kids, when you walk into these homes and those kids are miserable and the mom is miserable, everybody's freaking miserable. You walk in there and you don't go after those kids like your mom has been doing, or DCF or the cops or the schools, you know what I mean? Like, these kids have shit coming at them all day long, which is not theirs. They are not adults. It's the grown-ups that need the work. So when you go in there and you have the initial visit with the parent and then you explain to them, you're not there to parent the kids, it's your job, and this is how we're going to do it, and it could change very quickly. And then you bring in the kid, after you have them talk to the kid, by the way, it's not you, it's your parents. We got you. We're going to fix this. Just go with it. And they come back to the table and they're lit up. They're like, finally, somebody realizes that it's not my fault.
Right.
No, it's not. We're not saying what you're doing is okay. It's you're sneaking out and all that crap. Your behavior is not okay. That's what it's about. But here's the thing. It's not your fault. The adults need to work with. It's the adults, always the adults. So one of the biggest initiatives we have, in my opinion, is the No Fathers, where they're not going to drop their seed and leave anymore. And why? So part of the problem is the poverty. And so we're going to redefine fatherhood, and we're going to make fathers understand in whatever community, whether it's Caucasian or dark-skinned, black, female, we don't care. Wherever fathers have stepped out of the way or felt like they got shoved away with, like, maybe the feminism or the women's rights movement, I think they kind of felt like they've lost the indifference. I think they all kind of feel like maybe they've been put aside. Not needed, not necessary, when in fact, nothing could be farther from the truth. And by the way, it's not just your sons who need you, your daughters need you too, and here's why. And then my program for the fathers is to explain to them in great detail some of the most horrifying sex abuse cases I've ever experienced for myself firsthand.
Right.
And I am not shy about the stuff that's absolutely horrifying. And when this is what happens when you don't show up financially, and this is what happens when you don't show up and teach that little girl. Nothing else matters in her education. Nothing else matters than changing the narrative of their family by going to college or a vo-tech or whatever you do. You don't get, if you a father and child, you don't get to just drop your seat and leave. So that's a big deal. I got goosebumps. So we're going to redefine fatherhood and why it's so important. And again, there's a lot to go after. I mean, it's an enormous project, and yet it's the most It's very big.
Yes, it is very big.
It's
generational, too. I mean, you have to remember that.
Sex abuse in particular is more, like I said, more generational than alcoholism or substance abuse of any kind. And again, go back to the axis of healing the hurting and punishing the offenders, which also includes education for them. The education is really kind of where it's all at in terms of, but some of these are legislative issues. The Healthy Body, Healthy Mind program needs to be in every state for every school child. Oh, and let me go back to you real quick. Oh, gosh, my head just seems like they're getting old. Hold on. I'll have to go back to it. I lost it. Anyway, I'm sorry. But you were talking. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, so the initiative, by the way, there's no book on how to do that. I told God when he brought it to me, I can doubt, at 52 years old, I can doubt everything in my life up to this moment. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that God has prepared me my entire life for this time, for this work, for this project. And people who don't know, the Children's Alliance Task Force is now the umbrella organization to our sex crimes, our global initiative, and the mental health division. And Children's Alliance I changed it because it brought me full circle. When God hit me, I swear, he threw a house at my head, and I literally felt it physically, and I pushed myself away from my desk. I've been working hours and hours, and I just looked up and I said, you've got to be kidding me. No. You met me. I am not the girl for this. He said, no, you are. And then I told my son about it, and I said, nobody's going to say, why would anybody sign up for this? For the private invitation, the people we knew, in less than 3 weeks, last December, we had 162 members. We now have 1,040 people from around the globe signing up.
That's good.
To do all of this. And we're just going after everything that hurts kids.
Okay, hold on a second.
We don't have the right to
show. Let me say something here. The show's, I don't know what time you have. The show is almost over in about 2 or 3 minutes. I applaud anyone who tries to make a difference, you know, in the sick minds, in the troubled minds and hearts and spirits and souls, you know, of people who go out and do what they do against our children. And also, too, sex crimes is not just, like you said, pedophiles. It's also sex crimes. Those are, you know, the teenagers and the adults, right? So, anyway, the point is the act itself, all right? I feel like the recidivism rate is being is coming down? No, I don't. Do I think that there's hope
it's
for
not.
These people? I'm not sure. If there was, if everything you said here tonight, which was a tremendous amount, if this is truly something that can help, okay, hey, I'm for anything that will help stop abuse.
Exactly.
And you have to go, you know, all the way into the family structure. This isn't a tiny thing that you're doing here. And work from the tiny structure there of the family and going on and on and on and on and on it goes. And then you have to work with the system, too. There's all different kinds of things. I feel sorry for pedophiles?
Yeah.
I don't know if I do, okay? And sex offenders because...
Well, you don't have to pity... You do not have to be okay with how they act or what they do. But we can still love them as human beings. We can still care for them as if they have a problem because they do. And if any of the stuff we're doing, even if we get nothing really accomplished, if we prevent one kid from not getting hurt, it's worth our time. And I know that all of your listeners and all of the members of your organization, I know that they all feel the same way. Anybody who can do some remote admin work, we would really, really, really beg you for help.
Real quick, how do you get a hold of you?
We're all over social media. You can find my posts on either sex crimes and mental health or the initiative. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. But most importantly, I think we're on LinkedIn and kind of where we've kind of collected this like-minded group of believers. So they can go there, Jennifer A. Murphy or Children's Alliance Task Force. Children's Alliance was the name of the organization I first worked for. in 1987 for 2 years.
I know you've been very, 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 very busy. And your dedication is just, you know, just spilling out of you. It's, you know, I understand. And believe me, you know, the justice system and all this other stuff, you know, is crooked as it is, and also as inadequate as it is, you know, helping people.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to be really the answer. In the meantime, yes, I want them off the street. I want them in jail, and I want the first-time offenders to get a lot more than a year because they have, they've offended 128 times, 10 times with this kid, 5 times with that kid. You do the math, whatever. And you know, so that our children are not hurt, okay, anymore. But you're putting a spin on things that people have learned or thought about, whatever, whatever. And it's to look at, you know, the source. Of the sex offender, okay, whether it be pedophile or whether it be sex offender. And that's a different spin. I have to worry about thinking about empathy for them because I was abused so much.
You don't have to like what they do.
No.
But we do have to help them.
So if there's help out there and what you're doing, it sounds very good. And, you know, keep in touch with us. Let us know more about what you're doing.
Certainly.
You know, don't stay away for so many years, okay? because 2016 is a long time ago now, okay? So let us know
if
there's any progress.
We will.
Because it was an interesting show. And, you know, I like where you're coming from, okay? So
thank you so much.
We need to have something
happen. God bless you guys.
We need to have something happen.
It's this initiative. It's what everybody's been looking for. And so if I had not been trained in so many different ways and not gone to school for this education or that education, I wouldn't be the one doing it. But God gave it to me. God helped me. He and I are going to have a long talk when I get to heaven. I can tell you that. So it's going to say how I was going to do it.
Our show is over. I called in late, so I think I better play the music.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much, ladies.
Okay. Take care, all right? Keep it up.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.